morning. Welcome to the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM in Toronto. I'm Phil Taylor, your host. Hey, by the way, on the 25th of this month, we're going to be fundraising, and I want to tell you something. There's going to be a wonderful CIUT shirt's going to be available, created by Al Runt. He is an artist and muralist, and this is going to be, we're beginning on May 25, and for $125, you're going to be able to get one of these. There are two available, and for $200, you're going to be able to get both of them. So if you're smart, I suggest, after all, Mr. Runt is a very talented artist, and who knows, it's a very good investment even. So this is the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. Our guest today is Kim Ives. He's one of the editors at Haute Liberté. I believe he's with us now. Are you there, Kim?
I'm here, Phil. Good morning. Thank you very much for having me.
Well, we're really glad to be talking to you because, my goodness, Bitter Cane, which was made some years ago, is now being streamed by Criterion.com. You must be very proud. This is a heck of a film.
Yeah, no, it's, we're really honored that Criterion has chosen to include us in its collection, which is, you know, just that alone is a badge of honor. So, yeah, we're greatly happy to have it finally streaming online. You know, we made it now 43 years ago. 1983 was when we first released it.
You were a little boy at the time.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I was 26 years old. And I had, you know, spent about 6-7 years since I was a teenager, 19 basically, working on it, and the medium at that time was 16 millimeter. You remember that, of course, Phil, I'm sure. And, you know, that's how it was projected in theaters. Video had not become a thing yet. You know, we didn't really have any money to make a good transfer at the time. So the film was transferred and put on DVD, and we did have DVDs available for a while, but you know, the film never had the beauty that the original 16 millimeter did until a group called Indie Collect, based in New York, came and said, wow, we got to restore this film, and they did, and it's beautiful. It's even more beautiful maybe than the original 16 millimeter. So it showed around for about 2 years, 2024, 25, in film festivals, at theaters. We showed it at Brooklyn Academy of Music. It had a twice extended run there. Finally, Criterion picked it up. So we're just so happy that the world can really see this film, which is a snapshot of really Haiti just before it entered the period that we now see sort of culminating in this chaos and U.S. intervention and happening in Haiti.
You watch this film and you say, oh boy, I see where this is leading, living in, you know, looking at the headlines now. And the Haitians, based on particularly the people you are interviewed in this film, beautiful, beautiful people, by the way, working Haitians who lived really difficult lives. And I assume that though many of them are young, strong people, I hope they're still thriving, but they would certainly look at this with heavy-lidded eyes, right, and say, yes, this is us, and here we are again, right?
Right. Well, yeah, it's really the story of the Haitian working class and the American working class, as you saw in the film. Mm-hmm. So it is a working class film from 1983, which was the beginning of the U.S. empire sort of crushing the agricultural economy of Haiti and turning it into slave labor, wage slave labor, in assembly industries.
It's almost, by the way, it's like serfs to slavery in a way.
Right, I mean,
it tells it so beautifully. It's such a great snapshot. They are the big brag of the of those who dominate them is, oh, look, they each have land, a little piece of land. But then but then that gets transformed into, well, now they're laborers for really successful companies. So the future is bright. Far from it. But what a great great account.
Yeah. And in many ways, it was the timing was interesting because we finished it in 1983, and that was just on the cusp of the collapse of the Duvalier dictatorship in 1986. And so Bitter Cane became, in the Creole version we hope to have finished soon, and that will also hopefully find a streaming home, maybe on Criterion. It was shown around Haiti on, you know, church walls and bed sheets. And,
oh, the old days, yes.
University, yeah. And it, we have a whole, an old, you know, 16-millimeter projector, and we'd get a extension cord and run it down what in Haiti is called the Cumberland, because the Marine who was in charge of electricity in Haiti, his name was John Cumberland or something. So they call it a Cumberland when you tap into a electrical line off a telephone pole. And anyway, we'd project it. And so it had a huge impact really on building, I could say, the Lavalas movement. And in fact, one of the first in 1987, the year after Duvalier fell, Jean-Bertrand Aristide, still a priest, hosted a meeting of Ben Dupuy, who was the co-director with me of the film, who was forming a thing called the National Popular Assembly, and they projected Bitter Cane. So Bitter Cane became a kind of an ideological crash course for a lot of the population who were still illiterate at the time, and helped kind of build the momentum for that movement, which eventually brought Jean-Bertrand Aristide to the presidency in 1991.
If you go back, by the way, there used to be an expression that's no longer used anymore, but it ought to be. This basically was guerrilla journalism, wasn't it? Because you had to list as the director a pseudonym. It was, who was it?
Right.
Jacques Asselin?
Jacques Asselin, yeah. Well, we had hoped to make other films, follow-on films. In fact, we started. We have all the elements of it. We just never had the money or time to make it. The sort of fire hydrant of history made that impossible. But so Bitter Cane 2 was more or less filmed. If Bitter Cane 1, Bitter Cane showed all the problems, Bitter Cane 2 was sort of proposing solutions. Mm-hmm. But, what happened was the Duvalier regime fell. In fact, I was, when it was falling, I was about to go to Hungary to start editing the second Bitter Cane 2, but, you know, that fell, and then Haiti, was having a new government pop up, and Haiti Progre, which was sort of the predecessor of Haiti Liberté, was just launching in 83. So all those events just made it impossible to finish. But all of that to say that, nonetheless, the original piece that was made was, done at a very unusual moment. And we thought to be able to continue to film, we couldn't put the credits as they are now on the Criterion version. So, we just put Jacques Arcelin, and almost everybody else remained anonymous.
Isn't that great, by the way? These are you were all very creative. In particular, there was a lot of artistry in making this, but it was done for a clean, wonderful cause, and artists right. were not afraid to, or were proud to be anonymous in order to get it right. done.
Well, that was part of it. I mean, you know, part of it was practical. You know, we didn't want to be identified and flagged. I mean, when I was doing it, I went under a suit. I went under a pseudonym. I was there with another identity back in those days. But, you know, I mean, of course, that wouldn't be possible today. But the process of making it was in play, but also we didn't, the Haitian Liberation Movement, Mouvement Haïtien de Libération, which more or less was the touchstone for it, was the one who basically commissioned me and the others to work on this, you know, didn't want this to be a career building, you know, something that was just a careerist endeavor. It was, yes. you know, to make it for the cause.
Yeah. And then now it's on Criterion.com. Yeah. It's streaming. And people should get a membership, Criterion.com, because it is that's a great outfit.
The films are amazing. Yeah.
And it's bitter.
It's like the New York Times headline that they did on Criterion. It goes, okay, sure, it won an Oscar, but is it on Criterion? You know, I thought that was a good headline for the piece.
It is now. Boy, the film introduces so many things that I have to say. I was once in the Marine Corps. I got to tell you, that's a confession.
Is that right? U.S. Marine Corps?
Yeah, things happen, man. That was my education. A lot of people go to college. Mine was going to the Marines. And so I know some of these names. But you introduced me to one I didn't know, John H. Crane. And I knew Smedley Butler. And bless his heart, by the way. Smedley Butler wrote a book. War is a racket. You remember?
Yeah.
And, of course, he was in Haiti. But I didn't know about Mr. Crane, and you put up, there's a title there, I'm going to hunt that book down. The man said...
Cannibal Cousins.
Yeah, he said, I'm an honest imperialist, is the way he put it.
Yeah.
I'm an imperialist. Yeah. I don't want any...
Right.
Don't give me the folly swaddles. And the behavior there was disgraceful, I have to say, because I did a little looking into it, I thought I knew, as I said, Butler. Butler wanted to get out of there. He wanted to go fight the Germans.
Yeah.
And eventually somebody pulled strings and he did. But the rest just did what the Marines are told to do. Let me put it this way. Tolstoy said once that capitalists would do anything for you except get off your back. And... Isn't that where, I mean, it's from the beginning to now. I mean, they're always there to help, right? And train you and blah, blah. Your film, this film, Bitter Cane, which is Criterion.com, really shows how nasty it is once that guy comes ashore, what's going to happen.
Right, right. Well, yeah, I mean, John H. Craig, when we found that book, and he wrote two. One was called Black Baghdad, kind of prescient of what happened in Iraq. But the second was called Cannibal Cousins, you know, as if the Haitians were cannibals. It was just the most despicably racist outlook that many of the Marines of that period. And in fact, they actually recruited many Marines from the South, you know, who were racist than maybe others.
Yeah, there was a guy named Merkel, my goodness, shot people as a way to, you know, to question four people. He'd start by shooting one of them and then go to the next guy.
Yeah. But when we found John Craig's book, you know, we were just amazed by how honest and unrepentant he was. So, you know, we said, well, let's just quote this book. And we found an actor to sort of duplicate his voice, and that's that section which I think has actually we We have the honor of having been plagiarized by other films, which basically lifted
that,
that whole
an honor.
Section straight out of straight out of Bitter Cane. So, yeah, plagiarism can be an honor too, I guess. Being plagiarized.
I gotta say, by the way, it was so compact when you think of how much you got into that film. But you actually interviewed workers in Virginia whose plant was moving to Haiti because of cheap labor.
West Virginia,
And you put them, you give them all a styrofoam cup of coffee, and they all talk. And they say, some of them say terrible things, but others say really smart things. But you, here they are cramped into a, something they didn't see coming, and they're trying to explain it to themselves. I thought that was brilliant, just brilliant to hear them talk. With the southern accents and everything, and
right. Well, it was very seat of the pants. You know, it was very spontaneous. We ended up, you know, we worked. We reached out to what was a union then, the called ACTU, the American Textile Workers Union, and they basically, you know, set us up. And of course, this was before internet and cell phones and everything, so. You would just kind of show up. We showed up outside the factory and, you know, people came out and talked to us. And then we said, well, shall we go have a talk tonight at the Union Hall? Or what, you know, with basically just a shack with a light bulb hanging in it. And we did that. So, yeah, it was all just really serendipity, but incredibly amazing luck, I guess. But, you know, we just happened to put the knife in at the right spot.
Yeah, it was just terrific. You, among the things you cover there is you talk about the, I forget at what point after, of course, the Marines come and go. They're not always there, but they come back. And and I guess now they have a new toehold with the something called Southern Spear. People can read about it, by the way, in Haiti Liberté. It's a new phenomenon. But they always like to have those bases ready to go so they can control the region. I guess I got two questions. But one is you emphasize that they changed the Constitution so that foreign ownership, something that had been forbidden, was the door was thrown open to foreign ownership. What can you give us a date? I mean, and tell us about that.
Yeah, that was 17 or 18, I think it's 17, that they changed, rewrote the Haitian Constitution. In fact, FDR, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, claimed paternity of the Haitian Constitution and they said, yeah, I even think it's a pretty good little constitution if I do say so myself, something like that. So, you know, some people have challenged that. No, you didn't really, but I mean, he claims he did. So there you had basically the U.S. rewriting the Haitian Constitution to allow Haitian U.S. agribusiness concerns to go in and grow sugarcane. They grew sisal, which used to be used to make rope. They grew rubber. The very famous case of a rubber plantation in Haiti, which was just a terrible disaster, and it wrecked the soil, and you know, it never came off. But you know, they basically saw Haiti as a big plantation. You know, it was like a big slave plantation for them. And yeah, that was the reason they rewrote the Constitution. Said Americans, foreigners, can own land, property in Haiti.
Yeah, and so the little. Plot owners lost their land to plantation people.
Right, they were just uprooted. They were cast, and as you know, we show in the film. Really, they were transferred from being sort of peasant serfs, feudal, semi-feudal serfs, to being wage laborers. You know, working as agricultural laborers. You know, cutting cane.
Progress.
The title Bitter Cane.
Yes, and thank you for showing, because you just talk to the workers themselves, and they talk about how much money they make, $2.94 a day, and then they have to pay, they have to take two buses to get to work, they have to buy their breakfast from the company, basically, and so their 294 is almost gone before they even start to work.
Right. Exactly. No, they explain that they end up with, like 30 cents at the end of the day once all their expenses of transport and eating a tiny little lunch is covered. So, you really see that they were just living on a thread or hanging by a thread.
Mm-hmm. There's a couple of young women workers, and I love the anecdotes. It may, as you know, with anecdotes, you never know. They're just generalizations. But one of those young women said, "I've never seen a Haitian company. We're employed only by foreigners."
Yeah.
Oh, and they also say when foreign workers come here, they get $5 an hour.
Well, no, they were. We simply asked them, how much do foreign workers make? And they said, I think about $5 an hour minimum, you know.
Yes.
That's what, 1983, they thought. And, I mean, I think the wage was a little higher, minimum wage was a little higher in the States at that time. It was probably something around $8 or $9. But the point was, they said, kind of in what became one of the famous lines of the film, workers here, workers in the U.S. are paid by the hour. Here, we're paid by the day.
Exactly.
$2.64. Yeah.
Now, that was so sobering to see such really intelligent, articulate young women under those conditions. Clearly, they just have a crystal clear picture.
Right.
It's not as though they need a political scientist to tell them about their situation.
Right, exactly. Well, somebody said that, I forget who, but said, who is this Marx? He's talking about all the things that I'm living,
We're talking about two, Kim Ives, an editor at Haiti Liberté, and the film is Bitter Cane, and it's been since May 1st, is streaming at Criterion.com. Please go to that site.
I should say, Phil, just although it is a subscription site, people get a 7-day free period. So if they just want to watch Bitter Cane or a few films, you have a week, you can just get a free ride on it and then cancel your subscription. Yeah. So,
although,
that's one way to do it.
After having followed your instructions, I find it is a wonderful site. I was unaware of it. Now, I think everybody should get aboard. All credit to them. I want to ask you about a couple of individuals. Ben Dupuy, obviously a wonderful figure. He's behind this, right? He thought of this in 1977, the project, right?
The way it actually started, Phil, was I got out of school and was sort of recruited into the Haitian Liberation Movement at the time. And
you needed trouble, so they got you in trouble.
Yeah, right. So what I did was I made a slideshow. I don't know if you remember slideshows.
Oh, but, slideshows.
We got a
way to get rid of your neighbors.
Right. That was all that really journalists or people with a camera could really go down and do was take little pictures, sort of very secretly shot sometimes from behind a bush or something. And we put that into a slideshow and we got a special projector that would do it automatically and play music. And we started to take it around to colleges. We'd all jump in the station wagon. We were a little sort of collective of activists, about six or seven of us. And, we'd go to schools in Vermont or Massachusetts, Washington, D.C., and Philadelphia and so forth. Showing this and then expounding on the injustices of the Duvalier dictatorship. And then Ben came back from Algeria or Cuba or wherever he'd been traveling, and he said, you guys, we can't be raising consciousness with a slideshow driving around like this. It's like trying to move a mountain with a teaspoon. So he said, we need a film. We need a film that can be projected on the big screen and explain our struggle. So that's your next job. So that's when, in 1977, 78, he more or less gave me that mission. He said, you know, make this film, put together a team, get it. And it was very hard to find people who were willing to go to Haiti, you know, find a cameraman and who would let his camera go down there and risk being seized by the Tontamacutes or et cetera.
Ooh, so, you just said the magic words, yes.
Yeah. So we cast around, and, you know, the cameraman we found turned out to be, you know, just brilliant, Kyle Kibbe, who was I met him as a student at Hampshire College, and you know, he said, "Yeah, sure, I'll do it." And he you know, we got together the very rudimentary cameras, made one trip and then and two. So we really filmed it mostly during two times in 1981 and 1982, two trips to Haiti. So it was, yeah, just
this contributed mightily to the rise of Lavalas,
yeah,
if I can say that.
Lavalas.
Aristide,
right?
Who at that time was enthusiastic about this work, wasn't he?
Well, yeah, no, Aristide was, you know, the
he was one of the beneficiaries, actually.
Yeah, well, yeah, he was a beneficiary. I mean, he, as I say, in April of 1987, he had the National Popular Assembly sort of inaugural meeting at his church, St. John Bosco, which was burned down a year later by the Macoutes, and he was almost killed. Many other people were killed. But in September of 1987, he organized with other liberation theologian priests a big congress, a national congress in Okai. And, you know, it was basically a week of meetings and people discussing, you know, where Haiti mm-hmm. needed to go and the changes. And Bitter Cane was in many ways one of the center pieces of that conference. It was shown, you know, on a projector in a big hall, you know, filled with people. And, you know, that was to some extent, you know, how it really helped that movement grow and become. Really, the Lavalas movement grew out of that September 1987 Congress.
Yes, it's one hand washes the other, both hands wash the face. It
right.
Wide benefit for the Haitian people who are... Yeah. Still under the thumb, as it were. We're speaking to Kim Ives. He's an editor at Haiti Liberté, and the film is Bitter Cane, streaming on Criterion.com since May 1st. And it is going to have not only is it a great film now, it's going to have a great future. I want to ask you about some of the, there is a contemporary situation unfolding, and as one of the mm-hmm. editors, Haiti Liberté, I know you have thoughts about what the Marines and others are up to now with Southern Spear and what's going on.
Yeah.
We have had a rather curious development in Venezuela. We have had new kind of nastiness from the U.S. in Panama and various other. What is right. Haiti Liberté, you think about this?
Well, as we, you could say our cover bottom article this week is about Operation Southern Spear. And essentially the U.S., our analysis is that they're making an offensive on four countries. Obviously, Venezuela, where they kidnapped President Nicolas Maduro and his wife on January 3rd and are holding them here in Brooklyn on completely bogus charges.
In Brooklyn. Maduro in Brooklyn.
Yeah, being held in a cold cell in Brooklyn, separately, of course. You know, I mean, it's just unbelievable. Piracy and the war crimes and just anyway, the second is of course Cuba, which is the big, you know, prize of you know, that they're trying to get, and of course they put this medieval siege on Cuba, and are trying to starve the population and putting new sanctions every other week to try to break the will and the back of the Cuban Revolution. And Colombia is kind of covertly being targeted. The president there is about to leave, and we'll see how it unfolds there. But that's the third. But the fourth is really Haiti. And Haiti is not so much regime change as in Cuba and Venezuela, but more counter stopping an insurgency, because essentially all the children of the peasants that we saw, see in Bitter Cane in 1983 ended up having to flee to the cities. In Port-au-Prince, which at that time was 500,000 people, became 3 million people.
3 million in Port-au-Prince?
Yeah, in Port-au-Prince. And most of them have no job. They survive by hawking Coca-Cola on the street, or, you know, trying to fix a, you know, broken radio and sell it. So this is the reality for most of the population of Haiti now. Much of the peasantry has left the land and ended up in the cities, and of course crime flourishes in a place where, when you're trying to clean the windshield of the rich bourgeois passing by in their big SUVs, and they, you know, just roll up the window and drive by you, pretty soon you have no other choice but to turn to crime. And so that's where it's the emergence of what they call the gangs. But with the emergence of the gangs, there came the sort of vigilantes, the anti-gangs, you know, who and they were fighting. But finally, under the leadership of this guy, Jimmy Cherizier Barbecue, they were reunited. And this is, you see this in lots of revolutions. You saw it in the Chinese Revolution, in the Cuban Revolution even. Mm-hmm. You know, they took a lot of sort of cast off people from the lumpen proletariat and integrated them into the forces. So basically, this has become the dominant force in Haiti. And the U.S. is trying to break its back, is trying to crush it. But they're tied up in Iran. They're tied up in Yemen. They're tied up in, other fights across the empire. So they've farmed it out to mercenaries. And they have two sets of mercenaries. One set is the Eric Prince group called Vectis Global. That's what used to be called Blackwater. About 200 of them who are just committing terrible Gaza-like massacres in the poor neighborhoods of Haiti, and people can read about it in Haiti Liberté. The second one is a sort of proxy force that they've hired. They had Kenyans doing it for the first 2 years under the Biden administration in 2024 and 2025. But when Trump came in, they changed it, and they are making it bigger, and they're played with the UN to try to get the UN to help fund it, even though it's not a UN peacekeeping operation. It's just a U.S.-backed force, and they put the Chadians in charge of it. Now, the Chadians are badass guys who really, you know, have been fighting Boko Haram, and, you know, they're very brutal. I mean, not that the Kenyans aren't also, but they're trying to make it 5,500. So that's the second mercenary force. But finally, they want to come in, of course, with the U.S. forces. They might be forced to come in with U.S. forces in Operation Southern Spear, which is basically to establish the military, economic, and political dominance of the U.S. in this hemisphere and break the back of not only the socialist experiments in Cuba and Venezuela, but, you know, what the threat of such a experiment in Haiti.
What a story. I mean, it really underlines, by the way, Bitter Cane is a foundation to understand all this. And it's since May Day, it's been streaming on Criterion.com. This is
speaking. We liked that it was May Day.
Pardon me?
Yeah. We liked that the inauguration on Criterion was May Day.
Bless their hearts. Some genius thought that might be the best time. This is Kim Ives, an editor at Haiti Liberté. People should go there, but particularly on this that latter topic of the new plan, Southern Spear. They always have these wonderful titles for things.
Yeah.
You know, Dark Clouds, Southern Spear.
Epic Fury, right.
I think all of them want to work in Hollywood. I get the idea that half their ideas, as a matter of fact, I often think, I think they got that from this bad movie or that bad movie. I have to ask you lastly about a singer who is big in the, Mano Charlemagne, is that his name?
Mano Charlemagne, that's correct,
And he actually was, he was supportive, of course, obviously, the people's cause. He ended up, he was actually elected mayor of Port-au-Prince.
Yes, he was. Yes, he was. I mean, he was a brilliant artist. He was a, you know, had a voice of liquid nicotine. He was just, you know, amazing composer. And his he was, you could call him the Bob Marley or the Bob Dylan of Haiti. He was a towering figure. He died, unfortunately, from lung and brain cancer in 2017. But yeah, we worked very closely with him on the film. You know, he would watch it and write a song. I mean, the part of the film where you have the refugees, you know, at sea on their boat, you know, he wrote that after watching, you know, some of the outtakes on the editing table in the room. You know, we went back and wrote that film. That music, which is part of the film now.
Yes.
So, and of course, he plays that beautiful song at the end about alien cards, saying, you know, did the Americans, did the French, did any of those people who came and invaded our country have alien cards? And but you know, to enter our cemeteries, they won't need alien cards.
Yeah, so they won't need a special card to be put in the cemetery. He sing. Yeah. I notice he does always with a smile. Mm-hmm.
He delivered
his best lines with a smile.
Yeah. That's really correct. Yeah, you know, it's
really charming. It gives it just a nice touch. I think Bob Dylan would be honored to be called the Mano Charlemagne.
Mano Charlemagne of the U.S.
Of the U.S. We'll make sure we say it that way. Kim Ives, is really great talking to you. Haiti Liberté is a terrific journal, and congratulations that Bitter Cane is streaming on Criterion.com. And even UNESCO gave it a salute, right? It is part of the memory.
That is, they have a thing from the best documentaries, 1,001 best documentaries from 1895 to 2010. So Haiti Liberté was selected to be part of that very distinguished group. So, yeah, we're happy about that,
And too. You did all this wonderful work without putting your names up and photos and being interviewed by somebody on CBS.
Until now.
Until
we're
now.
On the Phil Taylor Show.
this is the breakthrough. Kim, we're so grateful. We got to get back to you soon, because these developments you're talking about are starting to get, you know, the clouds are gathering. So we're going to have to talk to you soon.
World War III has begun, my friend, you know, and it's going to be bad. So let's all buckle our seatbelts and fight the good fight.
Thank you. We'll talk to you soon.
Thank you.
Kim Ives. Haiti Liberté. And the film is Bitter Cane again, and it's streaming on Criterion.com. This is Taylor Hit. We have that song. We have a little song by Mano Charlemagne.